This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Now, you've heard about the drivers of high housing costs, more people moving in, many of them earning big money at companies like Amazon. But another reason is history, zoning policies dating back to the 1920s that are still having an impact on affordable housing in Seattle today. That's what Alan Derning believes. He's executive director of the Sightline Institute in Seattle and a member of Mayor Ed Murray's Affordable Housing Task Force.
Today, two-thirds of Seattle's zoned land is reserved for single-family homes. So that dramatically constrains the supply of space in which we can build more affordable forms of housing, like apartments. And the reason that Seattle is zoned that way goes back to the 1920s and, in fact, before that. Before 1926, zoning was not really practiced in the United States. The Supreme Court in 1926 recognized that states could give localities the option of dividing up the land in their jurisdiction for different purposes. To keep the pig out of the parlor was the phrase of in the Supreme Court ruling. That is to separate industry and smelly land uses from residential land uses. But very quickly, what cities started to do was to separate the laboring classes and minorities from the better classes, as they referred to in those days. So zoning quickly became a form of exclusion. So two-thirds of the land was set aside decades ago for middle and upper-class families who could afford to buy a home of their own. And so rental housing, which is where most of our working-class folks live, is left to compete for a much smaller share of the city.
Now, there are people who live in single-family neighborhoods, and you're making the argument that maybe there are too many of them, and they don't want to see new development. They don't want to have their little backyard overseen by a three-story townhouse looking over on top of them. They maybe don't want their sun blocked out. They don't want their territorial view blocked out. What do you say to them?
I live in a single-family neighborhood in Seattle, and so I certainly understand residents' concerns about growth that doesn't match the character of the neighborhood. There are ways that we can add housing options without disrupting the architectural character and feel of our single-family neighborhoods. My larger point here, however, is just to understand that the backdrop of this discussion about housing affordability in Seattle is that the city clamps down on housing in a huge share of our land base. That's the basic fundamental driver of skyrocketing rents in the city of Seattle.
We're talking about zoning and how it affects density and how it affects our neighborhoods. And I'm talking to Alan Derning, executive director of the Sightline Institute here in Seattle. Well, you've got a place at the table here because you're on Mayor Ed Murray's Affordable Housing Task Force. What's your number one priority going into those discussions?
Well, one issue that I'd like to discuss, as I've been saying, is the enormous amount of capacity for additional housing that we could provide from our single-family zones. And I'm not here talking about upzoning all of them for high-rise apartments by any means. What Vancouver, British Columbia has done is liberalize its rules for accessory dwelling units so that on every single-family lot in the city of Vancouver, BC, you can have an indoor apartment, that is a mother-in-law unit, maybe in the basement, and also you're allowed to build a backyard cottage. The result of this has been a huge increase in the number of units inside the city, and it hasn't really changed the character of their single-family neighborhoods, right? But it has, in some cases, doubled the number of units in a neighborhood. Seattle allows accessory dwelling units. It allows mother-in-law units. But our rules are much more restrictive. You can have either an indoor unit or a backyard unit. You must put in at least one additional parking space for each of these units. And in many of our neighborhoods, there's just no way you can put in a parking place. The owner has to live in one of the units. So there's all these ways in which we restrict people's freedom to put in what they call in Vancouver a mortgage helper and create along the way a whole lot of additional housing. Just relaxing the rule could over the years ahead generate perhaps tens of thousands of additional unsubsidized mid-priced apartments and backyard cottages.
If we add more units and do some of the things you've suggested, how do we know that's going to make things more affordable? I mean, what's driving this is a booming economy. More people want to move here. Mm-hmm. We're essentially in a private housing economy. It's businesses that build them. They build them for a profit. Yeah. Even if we add more units, isn't the pace of growth going to outpace the more units and continue to increase the price?
The problem is that we have not been able to keep up with the growth. The city of Seattle is in the fastest period of apartment construction in the last, 30 years Right now, we're in the middle of that boom, and we're still not keeping up with the population increase. We're hundreds of units behind, and that's why rents are going up right now.
But can you actually get a handle on this when there isn't a huge demand driven by a healthy economy?
There are two things going on. First is in a boom economy, there are lots of new units coming on the market, and new units rent for more. They're like new cars. They just cost a lot more, right? So we have rental prices going up partly because you've got this huge influx of new apartments, and they're renting at a 40% premium. And then the second thing is that when a lot of new rental units are coming on the market is also a period when population is increasing and incomes are going up and so on and so forth. So it's unlikely that we can build enough apartments quickly enough in the next 2 years to keep up with the demand. But it's very, very unlikely that the boom will continue. Most of these booms, you know, they last for 18, 24, 36 months and then they pass.
So you would argue with more progressive housing policies and the fact that all booms end, we might be able to stop this relentless increase in rents and housing prices.
Absolutely.
That's Alan Derning, Executive Director of the Sightline Institute in Seattle. He's also a member of Seattle Mayor Ed Murray's Affordable Housing Task Force. This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.